Okay, now Proverbs 10. Young people, stand up. Everybody under 21 who's not married. Did you bring your notebook? Raise it up in the air. Raise your notebook in the air. Those that did not bring your notebook, why did not you bring your notebook? Okay, next Wednesday night, everybody under 21, and I'm not kidding, if you're 20 and 11 months and 29 days, I want you to have a notebook. You think you're too old for this? That's one of the reasons you need Proverbs. You think you're so high and mighty, you don't need to do this. That's a good sign you need Proverbs, you see. And so get your notebook and bring it next week. Okay, be seated and get your notebook. How many adults brought a notebook tonight? Raise your hand. That's what I thought. Now, young people, you look at there. Now, you say, well, that's too childish for me. We're talking about you in these verses. You see, you think we're trying to get you to... Look here. See my pocket tonight? Here's one over here. Or I lost it now. But anyway, my pocket stays full of things. I write down everything I think about. If I get a good idea, I write it down. Just everything. Write it down. Well, keep it. Listen, things shoot through your mind you'll never think of again. You never will. If you ever accidentally get a good thought, write it down. Do you know the difference between a preacher that writes books and a preacher that doesn't? A preacher that writes books writes down what he thinks, and the other fellow doesn't think anybody wants to read it. So, write things down. Keep you a record. This is along the line of Proverbs. Did you know that I keep a record of every word that goes out of my office? Every letter I send? Do you know if I tell one of the staff members to do something, I don't tell them. We type it and keep a file copy of it. If I tell Brother Fifth suppose there's a light fixture broken in the auditorium, I don't tell him to have it fixed. I dictate a little inter-office memo. Brother Fifth, there's a light fixture broken. Please check into it and see that it's repaired. He's in charge of the buildings and so forth. See that it's repaired. And we make it in duplicate. I give him a copy. I have a file in my office with his name on it. And I put that in the file. And that way, if he comes back, I say, Brother Fifth, why wasn't that fixed? And he says, well, I didn't know. I just pulled the drawer out and show him, you see. Either that or he can pull it and show it's not in there. But you see, I mean, look, these are things that are the difference. So if I were you, I'd write these things down, and I'd keep them, and I'd study them, and I'd re-study them, and I'd read them, and I'd reread them, and I'd do my best to amount to something if I were you. And so here we go. Verse 11. Now we already have, how many do you have so far? 10. 9. All right. Some have 9, some have 10. Now tell me, give me one of them. Raise your hand and I'll call on you. We'll just use the audience now for this. Give me the first one. What's the first one? Tell me, who will, all right? Bill out. Get nothing wrongly. Quiet, tell me the second one. Who has it? All right, let's just read them. Second one is the what? The everybody together now. In unison, the whole thing. Ready?
The Lord will provide for his own.
Number 3, ready?
Don't be lazy, do your best.
Good. Don't be lazy, always do your best. Okay? What's the next one? Ready?
Do every season's job in season.
Don't put off today what you should do today, and don't wait till tomorrow to do what you ought to do today, or you'll go hungry someday. What's the next one?
God blesses those who do right.
Yes, God blesses those that do right, and doing right is the thing that causes God's blessings. All right, what else? If you live a righteous life. Remember we talked about Paul and Nero and about how the folks that live for God and have a righteous life are remembered, and those that don't, of course, are not. What's the next one?
The wise obey.
The wise obey. I said the wise old maid. That's what I thought you said. The wise obey. That's right. Wise people obey. Obedience. Oh, that's so important. Obedience. Obedience. Just obey. Do what you're told to do. All right, what else?
Yes.
Always be sincere. And if you tell the truth all the time, you don't have to remember what you said last time, you see, because you know you tell the truth. What else?
Tell nothing or everything.
That means you're not supposed to do what?
Wink with the eye?
Have a sly grin that does that says something that folks can't interpret, you see. It means you're supposed to be above board, open, frank, and so forth. Now, let me stop to say this. I'm not saying you ought to say all you know. And I certainly don't think that it's meritorious for somebody to say, well, I just threw and I just said it. Now, there are a lot of things better not said, don't you think? But rather than imply something, my mother's the world worst at that. I said, Mother, how do you feel?
Okay.
How do you feel, Mother?
I feel all right.
She never says she feels bad, but I can tell, you know. Now, she doesn't want me to think she's complaining, but she wants to complain a little bit so she gets some sympathy. You see what I mean? And she'd be a lot better since I feel sorry. But anyway, now, actually, in this matter of character, and this is not that, of course, we ought not to leave insinuations. So many people leave insinuations and just spread little things that make people... I told you about the fellow, didn't I? That comes to me sometimes and says, well, the house, I like you, I don't care what they say. Now, boy, that's one of the most discouraging things in the world. So say it, you know, say it. Did everybody say yes? You know, I'm not going to tell you. I'm just not going to tell you. You know, and you just got to know, haven't you? And you keep trying, you keep trying, you keep trying. All right, now verse 11. And each one of these proverbs has little or nothing to do with the one before it naturally. Most of them rise or fall on themselves, and each one of them tells us a truth about life. Now, there is a little connection, but usually not much. Now, verse 11, we come to the next one. The mouth of a righteous man is a well of life, but violence covereth the mouth of the wicked. I want you to circle the word well there, and I want you to write this word, aorta, A-O-R-T-A, aorta. What is the aorta? What is it? It is the main artery that pumps the blood, isn't it, to all of the body. Isn't that true? It is the main artery of the heart, and the blood goes through it to all parts of the body. Here's what it says here. It says, the mouth of a righteous man, and some folks, you know, have wells instead of mouth, but the mouth of a righteous man is an aorta of life. Now, what does it mean? It means that the mouth is flowing life blood all the time. Now, let's read the rest of it. But violence cover the mouth of the wicked. Now, what do we say? What would you say that would teach? Huh? I'd say it teaches you're known by what you say. You're known by what you say. Write it down. That's number whatever the next number is. 10. You're known by what you say. Now, it does not mean necessarily that what you say... Well, yes, what you say is usually what you are. But what you say is the big pumper, the big aorta, from which people get their opinions. It makes your reputation, shall I say. You're known by what you say. People come to hear me preach. They don't say, That fellow down First Baptist, I don't like him because he's 5 feet 11 and a half. Or I don't like him because he weighs 185 pounds. You don't think I weigh that much, do you? Thank you. I mean, I can just tell you, you're saying, oh, you don't weigh that much. But they don't say that. Or they don't say, I don't like him because he has brown hair. Or I don't like him because he has brown eyes. I'm known by what I say. I don't like him because he's loud. That's what they're more likely to say. Or he talks too long. Or something. You see, we're known by what we say. Say, he's a friendly fella. What do you mean? You mean he talks friendly. You see. That's one reason why we ought to weigh every word that we say carefully. Now, verse 12. Hatred stirreth up strife, but love covereth all sin. Circle the word strife there, please, and write fires. Fires. Hatred stirreth up fires, but love covereth all sin. Now listen, I'll tell you what that means. How many of you ever banked a stove? Ever banked a stove? How many have no idea what banking a stove means? All right, you're going to learn something. And it's about time some of you learned this. Now, back when I was a boy, we had a wood stove most of the time. Sometimes, one of the happiest days in our lives would be if Dad ever found a cross tie. Remember that? And Dad found a cross tie. That means we had enough wood to last for several weeks. And it would cut the cross tie up. Now, we had a wood stove, and sometimes we'd use coal. Not often, but sometimes we'd use coal if we were flush with money. And we'd have a wood stove. Now, listen. A wood stove has a stove pipe. Well, back in the old days, a stove pipe going from the stove. A stove pipe. This is hard. It's hard to believe anybody doesn't know what I'm talking about. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes,
sir. But it's hard to believe anybody doesn't know what I'm talking about. But a stove pipe is about that big around. It's like teaching a fellow how to multiply two times two, really. About that big around, and it's usually black, and it goes from a hole in the stove up to the ceiling, and there's a hole in the ceiling. Remember those little things we used to cover the hole with in the summertime? What did you call those? Covers? So, in the wintertime, you'd bring the stove and put it up. Now, a wood stove usually had four legs, and it was made out of metal, sometimes of steel, sometimes iron, usually cast iron, but sometimes heavy galvanized type stuff. And then you had a lever. It's called damper, but they don't know what a damper is. You can't describe a word they don't know. I know it's called a damper, but had a handle, right? A handle. Thank you. On the side, and that handle governed a big flat plate-like thing on the inside. And when you built the fire, you turned it up. That meant that the air could get through. You see, it could go out. And then if you wanted to cut the fire off, then you could close the damper, and that means the air couldn't get out, and you'd close the grate in the front where the air came from, you see. The little grate, about that big around, right in the front, had little holes in it. You could close them or open them. Now, if you'd open the grate and open the damper, that means the wind could blow and make the fire go. If you closed the grate and closed the damper, that kept the wind from coming, and the fire would gradually die out. Now, at night, you didn't turn the thermostat down, but you close the grate, and you close the damper, and the air could not get to the fire. The fire got lower and lower, and finally it died out. Now, what would happen is this. The fire would be maybe that thick in the bottom of the stove. To me, one of the most difficult jobs and the dirtiest job was cleaning the ashes out of the stove. But the fire would be that thick. Now, what would happen is this. The fire would keep burning down underneath. It would never quite go out, and that would eventually, of course. But overnight, a fire would not go out, but on the top, you couldn't tell there was a fire. And the next morning, you'd get up, and you'd open the damper. That's the little hole at the bottom of the stove. That's the grate, and open the damper. Handle on the side of the stove pipe, and the air would blow through, and the fire would start, and then you'd get your poker, and that was a big stick, and you'd stir the fire. Now look. honestly, you don't realize it. How many of you never built or saw a fire in a wood or coal stove? Raise your hand. Be honest about it. Now, you see, folks, we're working with just ignorant timber here tonight, and we have to start with very basic teaching. Now, that's what the verse means. The verse, let me show you, verse 12. Hatred stirreth up the fire, but love dampens all sin or the fire. Did you ever know anybody that wanted to stir it up? I mean, when a rumor simmers down, suppose there's a rumor out or something about somebody, and the rumor simmers down, and somebody wants to stir it up. Let me ask you a question. Suppose there's a rumor out about your son. You have a teenage boy. Suppose there's a bad rumor out about your boy. And it weren't true. Or even if it were true, what would you want to do and folks to do? I think I'm going to keep it hush-hush, wouldn't you? Real quiet. Why would you want to keep it quiet? Because you love the boy, you see. You love the boy. But hatred makes you want to stir it up. So if here's a fire, it's simmering down, it's banked, and hatred makes you want to get the poker, stir it up again, get it flaming again. Let it. Somebody's done wrong, for example, and people do wrong. But somebody's done wrong, terribly wrong, for example. Love does not want that to be made known. Suppose you had people come to me, and for the house, my daughter has done something awful. And I say, well, now, we'll keep it to ourselves. This is the house, please don't let this out. Oh, please don't let this out. And I say, well, of course not, because I love you, and I love the daughter. I love your family, and I would not want it out, you see. Now, if I hated them or had a tendency to strife, I'd just spread it all over the church. You see, I'd just say, oh! But here it says, hatred covereth up strife. Now, what would you think in that verse teaches we ought to do? Huh? We ought to what? Tell me. Keep shut up? No, I think I want to preach some more. Huh? Love one another? But and how will that love manifest itself according to this verse? Yes, I don't want to call it rumors or gossip. Even the truth. The natural man loves to find something that's true. You heard me say this. If you have this many people in the world that wouldn't believe something on you if they heard it, then you're fortunate. Most people, if somebody said, did you know Brother Hyle went out and in the pulpit, he threw a fit and started cursing, and that night went out and got drunk? Did you know most people, even my best friends, said, oh, I never thought Brother Hyle would do that. I'll tell you, it's just hard to believe. I'm so sorry to hear it. I hope I have a few people that say it's not so. Not so. When Dr. John Rice was preaching in Dallas, Texas, the Galilean Baptist Church, when Max Baer fought Joe Lewis, anybody remember about that far? Max Baer fought Joe Lewis. No, Jimmy Bridock. He fought Jimmy Bridock. That's before Joe Lewis became champion. I'm really dating myself now. But Max Baer was the champion. Was he champion? He lost the championship to James J. Bridock. James J. Bridock was the first heavyweight champion I ever remember. And I'd like to say he was a very much nicer fellow than Malcolm, not Malcolm X, Eli Mohammed or Cassius Clay or something. But anyway, Dr. Rice preached on why Max Baer lost his title, because he trained on liquor, and Dr. Rice preached on it. And one day down at the barbershop, one of Dr. Rice's enemies came in and said, I heard that preacher preached on Max Baer. I said, yeah. He said, I saw that preacher himself drinking liquor down the beer joint just the other day. And one of Dr. Rice's members heard about it. He was about a great big fellow. He's a deputy sheriff in Dallas now. And this fellow done a little firefighting himself. And he picked that guy up with a collar and lifted him right up to meet him eye to eye. And he said, I know that's not true, and you know you're a liar. He says, you either take that back or I'm mopping this place up with you right now. And the fellow said, okay, I'll take it back. He said, it's not true. He said, I lost $100 on the fight. He said, I bet on Max Baer, and I'm mad about it. And now that's the kind of friend you want to have, isn't it? They don't believe it. So I'd say this verse teaches, hatred stirs up the fire, but love covers it. I'd say that love keeps quiet bad reports, wouldn't you? Write it down. Love keeps quiet bad reports. Love keeps quiet bad reports. If you hear some bad report, I mean, it's true. If you hear something, it's true. Is it the folks on your part of the line having a hard time getting their calls through for a while? This is the problem. Okay, now verse 13. In the lips of him that hath understanding, wisdom is found. But a rod, and this is our verse we read last week a little bit, but a rod is for the back of him that is void of understanding. To me, that's a tremendous verse. A rod is for the back of him that is void of understanding. What do you think that teaches? Here's a fellow who hasn't got any understanding. He doesn't have any understanding or wisdom, and the Bible says a rod is for the back of him. What does that teach? Huh? Spank him? Sure. But what does spank him do? Sure. I think it teaches that spanking is a good way to get an education. Spanking is educational. Write that down. Spanking is educational. All the things I've learned, my mother taught me about life with a spanking. Just a spanking. Educational. Fellas, isn't... You've heard a fellow say this, like, well, I just can't understand it. And a guy gets mad and says, well, maybe this would help you understand it. Huh? This may teach you a little bit. That's what a rod will do. Now, listen to me again. If you don't spank your children, you are training them to be a disobedient criminal. Somebody asked B.B. Krim one time, said, when you ought to start spanking children? And he said, well, I think you ought not to spank little girl babies as quick as you do boy babies. He said, little girl babies should not be spanked. So I think they're about 3 weeks old. But boy, baby, you can start early on him. Now, as soon as you can, you ought to start spanking the child. Look, I said, if you don't spank your child, you're teaching your child that sin is not punishable. And you're making a crook out of it. You mark my words. You better not listen to these old maids that write these articles about child training. Dorothy Dix. She spent all of her life. That she was the Ann Landers of our day. She spent all of her life telling married folks how to get along with each other, and she wasn't married. And I'm simply saying that you better not listen to this about it'll thwart the personality. Most of these people, listen, most of them are as immoral as the devil. You better spank your child. Now, I mean what I'm saying. You spank your child. When your child comes in and you have company, does he embarrass you? If he does, you haven't spanked him enough. Let me tell you something else, too. Other day we had a funeral here. One of our dear ladies had a child that was acting up, and she did exactly what she ought to have done. She should have gone about 10 feet farther to do it. But I admired what she did. She grabbed that little rascal and pulled him out there in that vestibule, and I mean the corpse even heard. And she let him know what to do in church, and I want you to know that little fella got an education out in that hall. And he behaved the rest of the time. Listen, your child can't sit still in church. Spank him. If he won't behave, spank him. Company comes and child embarrasses you and got to have a drink every 20 minutes and whine, spank him. Take him out and spank him. Dr. Walt Hanford was going from Chicago to Seattle, Washington for a vacation. They have how many kids? Seven children. And everybody on the train remarks what fine children they are. What fine children. And you know what happens? Every time the children do anything wrong, Walt take them back in the restroom, give them a tar and feather. And everybody on the train got mad at them because they demeaned their children. You see, they want the results it brings, but they don't want what brings the results. They want the little children to set up on the train, but they don't want the spankings that go with it, and you can't have both of them. You've got to have one or the other. You're going to have a misbehaving child, or you're going to spank the child. Now, this is not for the house talking. It's the God talking, and you'd better spank that child. Now, I mean what I'm saying. You better do it. Listen, when our kids, and we don't have perfect kids, but I'll tell you what, when our kids were a year old, they were setting up, we had company. Now, we never had to get up and ruin a meal because the kids didn't behave. When our kids were 9 months old, my wife was spanking them. I didn't think she should, but I'm glad she did now. We never moved a single vase off our table. Well, listen, we've had some kids at our house not long ago. Well, man, we had to call Lloyd's of London and take insurance quick on everything in the house. Listen, if they'd let me have those kids 24 hours, they'd never touch a vase again. In fact, they'd never look at a vase twice. Now, I mean, listen, when a child gets to a place where he says, no, I was with a preacher in an eastern state not long ago, and we had some fellowship after the service. We went out to eat, and their little old brat of a kid ruined the time. He was about 3 years old. We couldn't even talk. The kid said, I want to sit beside Mama. And the pastor said, okay. And the kid said, I want back over there. And the pastor said, okay. Now, you'll forgive me, but after about 30 minutes of it, I said, now, son, you better just sit still. He looked at me, and he didn't say it, but what he told me in the heart, he said, I wonder if that guy means what he said. And my heart said to his, you better know it means what he said. And he didn't bother us anymore. Now, I cannot understand why people that want to rear children, listen, if they talk back to you, they'll talk back to the school teacher. They'll talk back to the policeman. And they'll talk back to the judge. And they'll talk back to society. You spank them. That's what the rod's for. It's for the back of him that is void of understanding. Verse 14. Wise men lay up knowledge, but the mouth of the foolish is near destruction. Now circle the word lay up there and write keep quiet. Wise men keep quiet about their knowledge. What it means is wise men do not say all they know. Wise men do not say all they know. It means they keep some in the bank. Here's what it means. Write that down. Wise men do not say all they know. Here's what I mean. When I went off to college and pastored a little country church, you heard me tell about it, I didn't know anything about the Bible, and so I just learned a verse, all about that verse 1 week, and the next Sunday morning I'd go out and preach everything I knew. Then I'd learn something that afternoon and preach it all that night. But now the Lord said if a person's wise, he won't tell all he knows. How many of you, I better ask you, but many of us operate financially. We spend exactly what we get. Exactly. I mean, how many of you, honest to goodness, absolutely, you just barely get on what you make, and if you get $100 a week, you spend $99.99, and it just seems like that just exactly as much going out as comes in, huh? Well, that's most of it. Now, some people lay aside a little bit and save it for a rainy day. Now, you better lay aside a little knowledge and save it for a rainy day. Let me illustrate. Cedar Lake Conference is going to come up. I'm preaching 3 sermons out of Cedar Lake Conference to you. I better have something laid away, hadn't I? See, I have to keep something laid away all the time. So, don't say all you know. Save some of it. Lay it up. That's what it means here. Save some of it. All right, now verse 15. The rich man's wealth is his strong city. The destruction of the poor is their poverty. The rich man's wealth is his strong city. Here's what it means. The rich man's wealth is the best thing about getting rich. But the poverty of the rich man is the destruction of the poor. Now, here's what that teaches, and write it down. This is number 14, I think. And that is, don't get anything at the expense of another. Don't get anything at the expense of another. That's about what we said one time last week, I think. Don't get anything at the expense of another. Now, there's nothing wrong with making money, but there's something wrong with making money if you step on somebody else's shoulders to do it. It is never right. It is never right to get anything, whether it's a promotion, or whether it's more money, or make friends, or get anything, if you do it at the expense of somebody else. How many times have you known people who worked their way up at the expense of others? I told you that last week about how I used to do it when I was a little boy with a little girlfriend I had, and I was about 8 or 9 years old. But we run down others. Look, cutting 6 inches off you does not make me an inch taller. And taking away from the poor so I can get rich is poverty. What he's saying is this. The very fact that you take it from the poor means you're really poor yourself when it comes to spirit and so forth. Young people, never, as long as you live, don't go to some, maybe 2 of you girls are fighting for the same boy. And so you go to him and run the other one down. That's a sorry way to get a boyfriend. Maybe two of you fellows in the same company trying for the same job, same promotion, and so you go to the boss and cast reflection upon the other fella so you can get the promotion. That's a sorry way to get a job. That's a sorry way to get a promotion. Whatever it is, don't ever step on the top of somebody else, and don't ever use anybody as a rung to your ladder to the top. That's what it says here. Don't ever. Look, how you get up the ladder is as important as getting up the ladder. Did Jimmy? How you get up the ladder is as important as getting up the ladder. One reason, one thing you ought to be careful about, all of us, and that is unholy ambition. I know preachers who want a big church so bad, they stomp on their people to get it. I know preachers that their people mean nothing to them. I mean, they just use the people to keep climbing, and the people mean nothing. Now, getting a big church is good, but you've got to step on people and treat people like animals and like sheep or cattle to get it, then you're all messed up. And so, consequently, the thing we ought to do is be sure that we climb as high as we can, but check each rung of the ladder and be sure nobody's hand's on it before you do it. Did you ever hold a ladder for somebody and hold their hand on the rung and their chest on your hand? Huh? How many ever had that experience? Oh, brother. And usually it's the heel that gets you. I mean, the guy does it, the heel, he wouldn't do it. But I mean, it's the heel of the shoe that gets you. And your hand's up there on, oh! Now, that's the way a lot of people are. Young folks don't, anybody, don't ever do that. That's not the way to get things. Not at the expense of somebody else. Look, a lot of people say, trying to get a friend. And that's one thing. God help me, I'd rather die. I may do it, but I hope I never do it, and I work not to do it. I'd rather die than get church members by running down somebody else's church. Or running down somebody else's pastor. I know preachers that'll get up and say, you ought to join this church. Why, this is the Baptist church over here, cold and dead and dry. You ought to get out of here. Now, I'll run down the liberal. His rot, his teaching of he doesn't say the Bible is true. But I mean, when people are trying to preach the gospel, and I know many, many a church like ours, big, you don't watch out. The richer get richer and the poorer get poorer. You won't have any compassion at all for little people. And people below you on the ladder. I mean, all right. Now let's go further. Verse 16. The labor of the righteous tendeth to life, but the fruit of the wicked to sin. Now what it says here, actually it says, when a righteous man works, it tends to life. When a wicked man works, it tends to sin. This is what I want you to write down. Everything a wicked man does is wrong. Everything a wicked man does is wrong. And here's what it means. Solomon said one place, even plowing is sin for the wicked. Anything wrong with plowing? Huh? No. Nothing wrong with plowing. How many ever plowed? How many ever plowed without a mule or a horse? I mean, you just pushed the plow yourself. You were the mule. Did you do that? Well, I declare. How many ladies did that? Well, what do you know about that? Is anything wrong with plowing? Not a thing wrong with plowing. But for an unsaved man, it's wrong to plow. You know why? He's doing it for himself. Anything an unsaved man does, he doesn't do it for the glory of God. 1 Corinthians 10:31 says, whatsoever you do, whether you eat or drink, or whatsoever you do all the glory of God. And anything a man does that's not for God's glory is wrong, and an unsaved man can do nothing for God's glory. So everything an unsaved man does is wrong, and that's why you can't work your way to heaven. Because all you do is wrong. What does it say in Isaiah 64:6? Even the righteousness is like filthy rags. Huh? Righteousness. It's like filthy rags. What does it mean? It means, you say, I know that my sins are like filthy rags. No, sir. For an unsaved man, the best he does is filthy rags. When an unsaved man goes to church, it's filthy rags. When an unsaved man gives to the poor, it's like filthy rags. When an unsaved man gives some food to the hungry, it's like filthy rags. An unsaved man tips a person, fix a flat, it's like filthy rags. Because his motives are wrong, he's not doing it to God's glory, and so anything a man does that's not righteous is wrong. Now, it may be right compared to other unrighteous people and other unrighteous beings, but he's not doing it for the glory of God. Listen, everything a person does ought to be done to God's glory. Brother Terry, that's why I like your song, and I'm serious. And It's anything I can't stand. And I hear all kind of phone leaders across America. They say, oh, all right, let me see your tonsils.
I got one of the day somewhere.
Oh, good. Now this time, won't you rear back? Pick out your favorite lock, Bill up there, and bust it out. And open your mouth so wide I can see your tonsils. Now, I think the fellow was a nice guy. It was another statement. I think fellow's a nice guy, but you're not supposed to leave the singing so folks can see tonsils. You're supposed to leave singing for the glory of God, aren't you? And nobody wonders about the material phone leading. And many others, too. You're not the only one. But everything we do, we're supposed to sing for God's glory, preach for God's glory, live for God's glory, eat for God's glory, drink for God's glory. All we do, we're to do for God's glory. That's why soul winning, sometimes we do it even tainted. We're not supposed to win souls primarily because people are lost and going to hell. We're supposed to win souls primarily because their lives are not bringing glory to Jesus Christ. And they're robbing Jesus Christ of glory, and they'll not rejoice and praise Him forever, and He's not getting the glory. And we want everybody we can to praise the Lord. That's the most holy order to win souls there is. And so, the labor of the righteous sendeth to life, the fruit of the wicked to sin. Now, verse 17. He is in the way of life that keepeth instruction, but he that refuseth reproof erreth. Yes. Now here's what it is. It means that a person who does good makes others do good, and a person that does bad makes others do bad. And so what it says here is this. We ought to always influence others for good. Write that down. The next one. Always influence others for good. Do you know anybody that makes you happy just to get around them? Is there anybody that you know that when you look at them, you laugh? I know some people that way. I'm not going to look at anybody, but I know just to look at them, I laugh. Now look at them for a minute. Watch them. It's catching, isn't it? I smile, you smile. What it's saying here is this. It's saying that every one of us that is happy, we influence others to happiness, and everybody that's righteous makes others righteous, but a person that's no count makes others no count. You have a scope of influence. It may be small, it may be large, but you have a scope of influence. Look, what if I came out some morning? Let's suppose this is Sunday morning.
And I walk out. I got my Bible. And we have the first song.
Won't your folks pray for me today? Things is not going good. Pray for me. I'm under the Genesis tree.
I don't feel good.
This sort of... You don't expect me to do that, do you? You know, you'd feel terrible, wouldn't you? Huh? You say, I don't feel good either. I tell my preacher boys, I say, listen, I don't care if your wife has just left you and your house is burning at home and your kids are have got nail in their foot and a hole in their head. I don't care what it is. I said, when you walk out on the platform, you do your crying before you walk in that door. When you walk out, everything's right. That's why I said we had some money. We're not broke. And if we are broke, don't tell everybody. Everything's all right. Why? Because I've got to enthuse you. That's why. I never tell you when I'm sad. Some of you folks can tell it. You know my eyes. You know where I look. You know me better than I know myself sometimes. And some of you say, you look sad tonight. And I wasn't sad that you told me. Then I feel terrible. I'm simply saying that every one of us ought to be used to encourage people and move people along and build folks up and cause optimism. That's the way you get the job done. I don't tell anybody. Anybody. Oh, I may tell a wife and a family. You know why? Because I'm considered a preacher, pastor. There's hardly a day passes or a week passes. I don't get a letter or a preacher comes to me. A fellow drove last week from Detroit, Michigan.
spend 1 hour with me in my study. He needs some counsel and advice. Every place I go, pastors follow me around, saying, I want you to help me. A fellow today said, up in Detroit, said, I want you to help me. I need some advice. How about this? Now, if next time I saw that fellow, he said, how's your church doing? I said, we're just not doing very good. I wish you'd pray for us. He wouldn't ask me to help him next time, would he? I would have forfeited it's my right to help that man. So, if I want to help everybody, I've got to be in a good mood to everybody. Everything's got to be okay. Now, what I'm saying is this. I'm saying is, you, in your scope of leadership, you've got to be doing okay. And to anybody to whom you're not doing okay, then you lose your right to lead them and influence them. Listen. President Johnson gets up on the television and says, we're in trouble. Vietnam. Now, we are in trouble. And I can cry about it. I wish he would. But I'm saying, he doesn't do that. The greatest country in the world, we're at the peak. I mean, Russia's already at the moon. We're just now passing clouds. But we're at the peak. Strongest nation under the sun. Not worried about Red China at all. I mean, that 50 megaton bomb they put off, just a firecracker. That poison that's flying over, that's just some chi-chis or sparrows for you. Unlearning. Everything's all right. I'm simply saying that if you teach a class, you'll not leave that class with that optimism. If you pastor a church, you'll never succeed with that optimism. I mean, you've always got to be on top and influence folks right. And to take our own little scope of influence and encourage people along the way. So, that's what he says. Now let's go down to the next one. What verse are we on now? Verse 18. He that hideth hatred with lying lips, and he that uttereth a slander is a fool. Now, there are two fools here, but the one I want you to get is verse 18. He that hideth hatred with lying lips. Now, this means this. He that is quiet and covers his hatred. So put it this way. Do not let quietness cover your hatred. Do not let quietness cover your hatred. Some of the biggest hypocrites in the world never say a word. See, isn't she a fine lady? She's isn't he a fine fella? But down inside, behind that quietness, is a heart that's full of tantrum, criticism, and bitterness toward others. Now, there are a lot of you people tonight in this service, I'm sure they're here. There are a lot of us. We don't criticize others. We don't talk about it. And yet, there swells in our own heart a cancer. Now, it'll come out sooner or later. What you are will come out. There's a chaplain that I used to know in the service. The preacher used to be a chaplain. He was left-handed. And so he went in the army as a chaplain. He was a lieutenant the first day because he was a chaplain. So he met the enlisted men on the streets the first day. And the first thing he did, the enlisted men saluted him. And he had never saluted. So he stuck his left hand just like this. And they just snickered and laughed and laughed. So he learned how to salute his right hand, and he learned, and he learned, and he was in the service for 3 years, always through his right hand. Still left-handed, but always through his right hand. And the day he got his discharge, he was so happy, he was running down the street with his discharge and rejoicing, and everything was so happy, and he saw some this and they saluted, and he stuck his left hand up again. Why? It's on the inside. It's there. I mean, it's natural. That's why we ought to keep our hearts clean of bitterness. Suppose I go home tonight, and Brother Hand, outwardly, I like you fine, but I toss and tumble and think about you and think bad things about you. That's what it's talking about here. He that hateth or hideth hatred with lying lips. And these lying lips are lips that don't move. They don't move. So, quiet people, you introverts, we extroverts just blow our top, and you introverts just keep it all inside. You're just as sorry as we are. Whole thing, you get credit for being a good guy. And we loudmouths don't like that, do we? you cover it. Hide it. Conceal it. But your lips are lying because it's built up on the inside. All right, let's go on down. Verse 19. In the multitude of words there wanteth not sin, but he that refraineth his lips is wise. Verse 19, don't be a know-it-all. Don't be a know-it-all.
You may think you know it all, but don't let everybody, don't talk like you know it all. Don't be a know-it-all. Verse 20. The tongue of the just is as choice silver. The heart of the wicked is a little worse. The tongue of the just is as choice silver. The heart of the wicked is a little worse. That means that righteous people have the greatest wealth in the world. Righteous people have the world's greatest wealth. The tongue of the righteous is as choice silver. Let's go further. Verse 21. The lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for want of wisdom. Now what that says is we ought to use helpful words. Helpful words. Always use helpful words. So the care that you and I walk down the street and meet each other.
We're just the finishers. Morning, Brother Terry. How are you doing?
I'm glad to see you.
How are you getting along?
Fine.
Good. Say, is that a new suit?
No, it's 5 years old.
It sure looks pretty. I like that. Boy, that tie goes good with that handkerchief.
Thank you.
You're looking good.
Thank you very much.
You feel better?
Yes, sir.
Now, you see, that's helpful word. Now, what? Come on. We're not through here. Hello, Brother Terry.
How are you, Brother Hyatt? I'm glad
to see you. Oh, you're losing weight.
I know it.
You look better when you have a little heavier.
Yeah.
You're not sick, are you?
No, I feel pretty good, I think. Okay.
Well, now, you're my friend. I want to tell you something. I love you, and I don't want you to get sick. You don't mind me telling you something, do you?
No.
That sound of the anchor going exactly nice.
I kind of colored mine.
How you feel?
Fine.
You feel good now?
Very
much. Now, see, I didn't help him much then, did I? Thank you. I'm simply saying that we ought to try to help people with our words. Help them. Now, if the tie and handkerchief don't match, you don't have to tell him either one. Don't lie about it. I mean, you and I both know that he goofed on that, you know, the tie and handkerchief. But don't, you shouldn't lie about it. But look, we ought to use helpful words. I said the other morning, why should anybody in the world want to make anybody else feel bad? What good does it do you to make somebody else feel bad? Huh? Well, what good is it then? Ask me how I feel.
Well, hi, how are you? I'm glad to see you. How are you feeling today?
Oh, well, I'm glad to ask. I've been having a growing toenail problem.
Is that right?
Right. And you know what? My stomach's been bothering me.
Is that
it right? Really has.
Have you seen a doctor?
Huh?
Have you seen a doctor?
Listen, I went to the doctor last month for my stomach, and next week for my ingrown toenail. I had blood pressure. We checked it. We can't find out what it is. I just feel terrible.
I hope you get paid.
No, you don't. All right. Now, listen, boy, what did I do? What good did I do? Huh? Any? I heard. There's a few of you folks that I've learned not to ask how you feel. How can you tell me? I just say good morning to you. Now, from now on, if I just say good morning, that doesn't mean you're one of the people. I'll get more folks mad at me from now on. But look, I'm simply saying, we ought to use words that make people feel better and cheer folks up. Oh, let's rise above this thing of wanting to make people feel bad. And wanting to do things. Oh, but that's beyond, beneath the Christian. Okay, let's go further. Verse 22. The blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich, and he addeth no sorrow with it. Boy, that's a great verse. Here's what it means. The Lord's fun has no sorrow that follows. The Lord's fun has no sorrow that follows. Do you ever stop and think in the world, everything that's fun, you got to pay for it? Name something that's fun for a while. Might be a little fun for a while, but it's sorrow follows it. What? Well, here you go out and you get drunk. How many of you ever drank? You ever drank? Even a bottle of beer. Would you lift your hand? All right. That's the question. Did you do it because it was fun? How many, when you used to drink beer, temporarily, you had fun out of it? I mean, for a while. That's why you did it. Well, of course. Then that's the question. The next morning, did you feel as good as you felt while you were drinking the beer? Then sorrow follows, doesn't it? Okay, here's a fella. He walks down the street and he sees another fellow's wife, so he flirts with her. Is that fun?
Well, you may think it's fun. You flirt with her, and she looks at you and smiles at you a little bit, and that's fun. Then her husband sees you and knocks the fire out of you. You see, there's nothing, young people, listen, there's nothing that is fun in the world that doesn't have a tail wagging behind it that's called sorrow. But righteous fun doesn't have that tail called sorrow. Righteous fun's fun tomorrow. That's the difference. That's what the devil doesn't tell you. The devil doesn't tell you. He advertises just the fun. He doesn't advertise the tail wagging behind it, you see. Now, that's the reason that you ought to have all your fun righteous. Everything. Now, what's righteous fun? Well, coming to church, going to a good church party, going to the rescue mission on Friday night, or having the senior banquet, having a good time, comes over together, have a big time. Anything that's righteous fun, it needs no brown tape. Let's go down to the next one quickly. We're almost through. Now, it is as sport to a fool to do mischief, but a man of understanding hath wisdom. Now, here's what it is. Write this down. It is not right to do hurtful amusement. It is not right to do hurtful amusements or hurtful sport. That's why boxing is wrong. Boxing is morally wrong. You're trying to hurt somebody. Now, nothing wrong with a couple of fellows getting out and sparring a bit. I'm talking about this bloody thing that we saw in the pictures on Sunday morning. When a bunch of guys get together and beat each other's brains out for $100,000. Anything is wrong that you have fun doing if it hurts anybody else. That's why it's wrong to gamble. You hurt somebody. Well, you say we just do it for sport. You hurt somebody, though, when you do. No person should participate in any sport that is hurtful. And he goes on, it says, it is as sport to a fool to do mischief, but a man of understanding hath wisdom. 24. The fear of the wicked, it shall come upon him, but the desire of the righteous shall be granted. Now, here's what it says. Listen carefully. A wicked man fears. Oh, my. What's going to happen? Well, that's it. It's going to happen, all right. A righteous man says, boy, I'm just looking forward to tomorrow. And tomorrow's real good. Did you know that half of joy, psychologically, is looking forward to something? You know that? Did you know that's one reason First Baptist Church is growing? We try to keep you looking forward to something all the time. Half of it. Let me ask you a question. Diane, you got married since I've been here. And I happened to see you first. And then there's a couple on the front row and a couple back here and others. But Springles got married not long ago. What was more fun? Don't answer me, but just you say it. What's more fun, being married or preparing for the marriage? Don't answer me. The shower and the gift and the choosing of the wedding gown and the sewing of the gown for the attendants and the thinking about it and the talking about it and the choosing of the ring. And when you get married, everything's been done. There's nothing left. It's fun. You're married. No, I'm simply saying that marriage is wonderful, except looking forward to something. That people come to me and say, well, I'm miserable. I say, well, I don't have anything to look forward to anymore. That's what they say. It's always that way. So consequently, a person will usually get what he expects. You come to church and you say, boy, I just can't wait to preach you tonight. I just believe we're going to get a good sermon tonight, and you probably will. Same person sitting right next to you. I just don't believe preachers. I just wish, and you probably won't. You see, you get what you expect. Now, what all this is saying is we ought to just do what's right all the time. If every person would say three things, listen, three things. If you'll say, I'll do what's right, I'll ask the Lord to guide me, and I'll do what I think love would prompt me to do, you'd usually do what's right and make the right decision. God, give us character. Give us some people that have moral principles, that don't try to hurt anybody, but that are honest and upright and above board and decent and clean and realize that it pays to do what's right. I said before, it right is always its own reward. Right is always its own reward. If you do what's right,
the feeling of rightness is worth it all. How many, and I've asked this before, how many have ever stood by yourself and you laughed at and you made fun of, but there was sometime you stood up and stood by yourself and it was hard to do, but you did it. Lift your hand. All right. Did you expect $100 bill for it? $100 bill would have cheapened it, wouldn't it? It would have cheapened it. Well, what did you get for it? Huh? You got the joy of doing what's right. You got the privilege and the joy of doing what's right. Our Heavenly Father, help us to have character and be what God's people ought to be. In Jesus' name, amen. Good night.